The mindset really, it was about how did you want to die? Customize your own death during the surge in Iraq. You wanted to die in uniform, fighting for what you believe in, or did you want to be home and having some members of Al-Qaeda take you out of your helm and shoot you in the back of your head?
You're listening to the Christoph Lewis Podcast, a podcast where I have conversations with inspirational people. My name is Chris, but my family calls me Christoph. My goal is to have as many conversations as possible with people who have forged their own path by pursuing their dreams, making them a reality, all the while emitting positivity and sharing this knowledge with others. I seek these people out and share this information with you, proving to the world that you can do what makes you happy and do what you want for a living while being a good human being. We'll talk about careers, but we'll also cover any story that inspires. Let's do this while helping each other. Thanks for listening. I'm happy you're here. What's up, my friends? Welcome to the Christoph Lewis Podcast. I'm so excited that you're here. My guest today was the youngest sergeant major ever in the Iraq Army. He was a spy for the United States, and now he resides here in the United States. He is none other than the one and only Hamidi Jassim, and I was very, very humbled to have him on here. We talked about the power of choice and deciding how you want to die. He said that he joined the army because he didn't want to die at home with a gun to his head. He wanted to join the army and die in a uniform and inspire the children of his country. 10 years later, they've grown up and they were the ones to get ISIS out of his country. So he inspired them back when the army was literally only 150 people, and now the army is 500,000 people in Iraq and tough enough and big enough to get an entity, a sick entity, out of the country like that. So if that's not inspirational, I'm sorry, this isn't going to be the podcast for you. Then we compared that to literally anybody's life, because he said life was harder in the States. So everything's relative. Everybody has their own problems. And this story is the epitome of that. He's experienced both ends of this in different countries. I'm very excited to share this story with you. You can hear this conversation and all the contemplation episodes on christophlewis.com/podcast. And you can find me on Instagram at Christoph Lewis. So without any further ado, welcome to the Christoph Lewis Podcast.
It's my pleasure and honor being here with you.
Hamidi, like you were just saying, you're no stranger to the interviews. And I'm just so, like, because of that, exactly, I'm always so appreciative of people's time when they come on here and they want to talk and they want to share their story, even though they've shared it 100 times, 200 times, 1,000 times. But I think going out there and continuing to do that is really important. Before we get into anything else, for people that don't know who you are, let's just knock that out real quick. It doesn't have to be too wild.
My name is Hamidi Jassim. I'm born in Baghdad, Iraq. I was a former Iraqi soldier that was working as an undercover intelligent asset for the United States intelligence. I went undercover in 2005 to 2008 in the Iraqi Ministry of Defense, which I was the command sergeant major for the Iraqi Ministry of Defense back then. I was the youngest sergeant major in the Iraqi military history. So I was one of the choices that was made by the American Special Forces to lead the Iraqi Ministry of Defense. Wow. And end up being recruited there as an intelligence asset to battle terrorist organizations at the time that was taking control of the Iraqi Ministry of Defense, like Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, Badr Corps, Mahdi Militia. So it was kind of like more of a common ground, a building where was just kind of a battles of the spies. We're all kind of spies on each other. We all kind of like we're causing each other damage, but I did that until about 2008. I ended up getting hurt, and then I lost some of my team members, and ended up leaving Iraq completely in 2008.
Man, that is that's quite the resume, to say the least. Like, blows me away. It actually reminds me of this is like one of the 83, I think, the 83rd interview I've had, and the 32nd one I had was an Iraqi refugee. A woman I had talked to, and she had an amazing story as well when she escaped. Wow. And like listening to her story blew me away. So that was my first real glimpse into life over there. I've been deployed to Afghanistan 3 times. So I saw it's different, but
it is,
it's totally different, obviously. But that was my personal first glimpse into the absolute chaos and madness of what can happen to a country. and I've never been deployed to Iraq, but man, that background to me, like one of the first things that came to my head was like, okay, you've done all this stuff and you grew up there as a child, but like what in your mind like clicked, or was it like a series of things that clicked to where you did everything you just said? Like you could have just gone and joined the military, but like going like all these extra steps and like doing some, because like the military is obviously dangerous enough as it is, but I'm like, yeah. This guy, not only are you growing up in a completely dangerous country with terrorism everywhere, but you're joining the military in a hostile environment, and then you're going a step further by becoming a spy, working with the US government. Like, explain the mindset behind that. I really want to know.
I think it's about the power of choice. You know, back then, when I was in the Iraqi military was a very tough, bad position back in 2004 to 2005. The surge was at its peak. Mm-hmm. Iraqi soldiers were getting killed like in the minute basis. And you were not a winning army. You were a losing army. You're not a huge number of a group of, you know, you're not a big army number wise. You don't have enough soldiers. You're facing an enemy that's pretty much like ghosts.
Yeah.
It was all about the morality of the people that you were getting into the military. So we were not just fighting to survive. We were fighting for the reputation of that army. The reputation of that army is in your hands, whether you succeed in building that army or you finish it as they want to. They wanted to make sure no more people are going to the recruiting center or joining the Iraqi military. So it was a very tough decision. Even though you're fighting to survive, but you know you have to keep yourself alive to a point that you are motivating the next generation to come and take this brand from you. So the mindset really, it was about how did you want to die? Customize your own death during the surge in Iraq. You wanted to die in uniform, fighting for what you believe in, or did you want it to be home and having some members of Al-Qaeda take you out of your home and shoot you in the back of your head?
Man, that's freaking deep. I didn't expect that answer, and that's why I really wanted to know, like, how do you want to die? That's just not something that people experience over, I'm outside of D.C. That's not what somebody experiences growing up. There are obviously some areas in the States and around the country that are like that, but I don't know anything like that. I didn't grow up like that.
That's insane. It's just about, as I said, it's just about how you wanted to make your legacy back during that time. You knew you were going to die. I think after 2004, after Haifa Street battle, and we came out of that place, I was a platoon sergeant that left Haifa Street. I entered Haifa Street with 29 of my soldiers. I left there with 9. And when after that battle, you realize that Iraq wasn't going to get any better. It's going to get worse. And that this is not going to go anywhere good. And it was really just about how you wanted to carry your death against this enemy. Do you want to just die right in there in front of it and have it win? Or do you want to cause it enough damage? So one of the reasons really got me to work for the U.S. intelligence or even to take such a route, it was the only way for me that I was going to cause that much damage to the enemy that I couldn't do as an Iraqi soldier.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great answer. Like, what's going to cause maximum damage? That's amazing. And leaving a legacy is another thing you said. And I just keep on going back to, like, how do you want to die? I mean, I think not even everybody. I always like to think, like, I was talking to Taya Kyle, and I was like, you have a choice. You have a choice, because you said choices too. And you have a choice to, like, her words exactly were, you have a choice to go forward and move out of the darkness, or you have a choice to succumb to the darkness. And it was always like in my head, because I think I had started and she corrected me. I was like, you don't have a choice. And she's like, well, you do. You can fall back and you can succumb to the darkness. But in your life, you chose to like stand up like tall and like take charge and like actually make something of it, instead of like essentially getting bullied around and ultimately killed by these insurgents. Right. So you've gone out there. And then I think the legacy part's so important, because you're setting an example, like you said, specifically for the next generation. So I think this is a very extreme example of that. I've talked about emotional intelligence a lot on this podcast, and setting examples for our children, like in a country that is America. How do we do that? How do we, you know, give and set a great example for the children? But there, that's an extreme version of setting that example for children. And I think Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, and if you wonder, you know, this was the main goal, as you mentioned, is about setting an example for the children. That what really got me to understand that my time and my sacrifice and my team member lives was worthwhile is because the children that we were fighting for during that period of time are the soldiers that fought ISIS in Mosul 2 years ago and kicked him completely out of the country.
That's badass. You're part of that, man.
That was the point of it, is that you were fighting for a next generation to look up to a soldier.
Hell yeah.
And that was the thing that we were looking into. I mean, I had soldiers who are fighting in the unit that I commanded back in 2005, reaching up to me and saying, we heard about you. I am just a 21-year-old going into the fight in Mosul. I just want to say thank you for everything you've done for us. And when you hear these words, it really makes you feel motivated because you fought for that guy as a 11-year-old to look up to a soldier. And back in my time, I did not have the equipment or the weapons or the firepower that this guy has today against ISIS.
Yeah.
I had the biggest weapon I had in the Iraqi military was a PKC, which is equal to an M249 saw. And that's all we had.
Yeah.
While our enemies had car bombs, suicide bombers, RPGs, all kind of rocket power, we were like facing pretty much the impossible.
Yes. And sticks today, you look into
the Iraqi military, it's over 500,000 soldiers in the ground, where we started in 2003 with 150 soldiers.
Good God.
So you're looking into the changes and what you got into so far that – you know, today the Iraqi military is big enough, 500,000 soldiers. Soldiers are very motivated to fight. They have the stories they're relating to, and they were able to kick ISIS completely out of Iraq on their own. And that's what differentiates us from Afghanistan. Once we are determined to win and to believe in what we believe in, we can do anything we want.
That's incredible. I just think that's so cool on so many levels because we're talking about emotional intelligence. We're talking about setting examples for children. And there you are. That's what you wanted. I think it's so cool for you to be right now in the present day to look back and be like, tell yourself, like that version of yourself, like I made an impact. I made an impact because I had these thoughts when the army was, are you kidding me? 250.
150. Yeah. I was soldier number 19 that joined the Iraqi military.
Yeah, but. So, like, I just want people to understand the gravity of this. Like, that's like, okay, so this, like I keep on saying, it's an extreme example of leadership, of setting examples for your children, of going out there and doing something when the odds are most definitely against you. So whether it's your position, which is extreme, or I talk a lot about careers, like you're not doing what you want. You think the odds are stacked against you. You can't pay your bills. You're not freaking happy. You know, go on and go forth and, you know, substitute any variable you want in there at any length, any end of the spectrum. This is a common theme for us. But to go up there, like I said, stand up tall despite the odds and go out there, set an example. Now, like I said, you get to look back and you get to see like I fucking did that. Like I helped do that. And now you said that you kicked out or you were part of setting this example for the children a decade later that kick out ISIS. Like that, it blows me away. Like there's no words. I'm not Iraqi. I'm not you. I wasn't there, but I can imagine the best I can, like close my eyes and think about if somebody was to come to my country and do something like that. And I was part of that. Holy shit, man. Like that's amazing just hearing that. And I think obviously you've thought about this a million and one times, and I know you've had a million and two interviews, but like from me to you, like that's absolutely upstanding. And I think it sets such a great example. And that's what I talk about in this podcast. It's like, I want to talk to real live breathing examples, like real people that have gone out there and made an impact. And whether it's careers or whether it's a positive impact in the world, I talk about so much of, I very much think because I've seen it in myself that we've sold ourselves short. We've always sold ourselves short, but here again, amongst the odds, against the odds, you've gone out there and you've made an impact, and it wasn't overnight. You said to yourself, you lost most of your men. A lot of bad things happened, to say the least. But here we are talking about this, and you know, ISIS kicking rocks.
And it's the changes, you know, the changes that Iraq was through. I mean, 2004 to 2007, during the surge, it's one of the worst times ever Iraq has ever witnessed since the Iran-Iraq war. You know, this was where the war went on the street. It was a religious war that broke out between the Sunni and Shia, and you were literally fighting everyone. You were not, like, in anyone's side. You were the one who's facing the mall in that position. And you just have to make a decision at that time is what you wanted to do. And it's really, it was a magical moment for the Iraqi military back then, even for the American military, that, you know, when we joined the Iraqi military, not everybody there was there for the motive of fighting for the country, you know? Some people were there to get paid, but once they saw the war with their own eyes, they realized this wasn't for them. They went home. Hmm. And that was one of the main reasons that I got a battle for promotion and I got my career to be so advanced in the Iraqi military, because there wasn't that many people that stayed after 2004.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. You stuck it out.
It was very few. And as a 17-year-old kid at the time, I just didn't want to go home and have someone put a bullet to the back of my head. I looked at it and I said, you know, if I'm going to die, I'm going to die in my uniform. And I'm here with my teammates. Mm-hmm. We're just going to do what we do and until the last one of us survive. And that's how we're going to do. And that we wanted to set an example for the Iraqi people. So we realized that at the time that the biggest fear that the enemy had was not fearing of the U.S. military. This was the easiest target for them because they knew the U.S. military was not so familiar with them and their tactics and their backgrounds. Where they were nervous is people like us, that we knew them pretty well. We know who they are, with their backgrounds. We have so much easier ways of collecting intelligence against them. To the point that they were fearing us more, even though we didn't have the technologies and the advancement weapon-wise. But, you know, when I started working as an intelligent asset, the biggest game was street-level intelligence, because this enemy was not the kind of enemy that was using technologies, or this was all about who you know and what intelligence can you collect off the street, which was a very kind of a mission impossible for the U.S. intelligence, because Iraq was a very conspiracy theory country. We were policed by Saddam for 35 years. So you're talking about, you are not battling people like the Talibans in Afghanistan, who's just villagers with weapons. You are battling an actual former intelligence officers that worked for Saddam as a Republican Guard intelligence officers. Some of them who have been trained by the KGB in Russia during the Iran-Iraq war. So these individuals had a certain methodology. They were a professional intelligence operative. It was not easy for you to make a hole into their plans and figure out who they really are, what they're doing. So, you know, for me, it was one opportunity in my life. And I think that if I didn't make the right decision that day, that moment, I wouldn't be nobody today.
No, you're absolutely right. You said a couple things and you actually, you perfectly transitioned to the next thing I wanted to say, but I had this vision of the Spartans when you said we're a fight to the last man, and I think that's absolutely upstanding and heroic of you to say that. Not everybody would do that. So you did not succumb to the darkness and you went to the light, and be able to do that is nothing short of incredible. But you said opportunity, and you had the opportunity. Now, having lived in both countries, in Iraq and living here, you obviously had a certain amount of opportunity over there, and you have pretty much an unlimited amount of opportunities over here. Having grown up like that and now experiencing this, I mean, you've got to see some like amazing contrast between the two. And I see a lot of people struggle with what they want to do, and that's why I'm trying to do this, to encourage people to do what they want to do. So, I mean, would you say anything to like literally anybody listening? And I don't care. I literally don't care what you're doing if you listen to this, but can you like explain the limited amount of opportunity you had? Now you're actually living here, and how you see that juxtaposition, and how people should take advantage of that.
I think people need to believe in themselves, you know. I think what really got me to be successful in anything that I was doing, whether in my military career or in my career as an author, it was about what I call making the crazy decisions. To go against the waves. And what that is truly, it was to believe in yourself and not listen to anyone's opinion, not listen to what tell you. I mean, look, a terrorist in Hyper Street told me in my radio after he killed some of my soldiers that, you know, that I'll not leave that ambush that day, and he'll end up killing me, and I end up getting out of that ambush. And I just kept fighting. I had only 16 bullets when I left Hyper Street in 2004 in my magazine. It was just about believing in yourself and pushing yourself against the waves, fighting against no matter what you have on you, how much you have on you. It's going against it and giving it all you got is what matters. I mean, when I came to this country, things were not easy. You know, my battles didn't end. It just it differentiated a little bit from being in battle, fighting bad people to more trying to figure things out because I was in a new country.
Yeah.
In a country that's pretty much now became my country. I can go back to the country I was born at. I'm a spy. People will slash my throat if I go back. You have to make a decision into what you want to do into your life. And biggest thing for me is believing in myself. You know, like not many people knew about my story. I didn't have a book back then. I came here and I started as just a random immigrant in this country. And when I, you know, one story that remains in my head today is when I wanted to put my book out. My whole story was a classified back then memorandum written by an intelligent, higher intelligent officer about who I am, what I was doing for the country. And when I went to put my book out and release it to the public after I was losing my team members against ISIS, who are very few members of my PSD team, who I graduated with in 2004, who were 17 members today. There was only about four still alive. And I was losing these guys one after another. I decided to put my book out. And long story short, a big writer came back and in New York City, who looked at my story and told me something that I will never forget to this day. And he looked at my story and he said, your story is amazing. It would make a great movie. He said, however, I don't know how the American people will receive a story by a foreign national. And that word just remained in my head. And I think that's when the challenge started in me again. That's when I started to feel I wanted to challenge again. And when this person told me that, I was at the choice of handing my story to a publisher or actually go on my own and, you know, or not release my book and not worry about it and just believe, say, you know what, the American people are not going to appreciate anything about you done, or they're not going to care about what you done because you are not, you know, you're in the end of the day, you're a foreign national. And I didn't know what that meant back then, foreign national. I was an American being here. So I end up releasing my book.
Good.
I proved that person wrong by selling thousands and thousands and thousands of books. And I ended up selling more books than he ever did because I went and checked his records to make sure that I beat him before I could talk to him again.
That's
and
so juicy.
I proved him wrong that the American public actually received my story very well.
Yeah.
And that he was wrong.
Fuck,
and
yeah.
This was a New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, yeah.
Very big writer. At the end of the day, he's just a writer. He's not a military person. He's not someone who had the experience. But
that's so
that
cool.
Was the biggest challenge for me is that if I have listened to that guy that day and never released my story, moved on in my life, today my story in my film, which is it's about to be released, it's based on my book. It's the first military intelligent operations to be released to the public. It's being taught for the U.S. military about insider threat, which I'm sure you knew what insider threat is.
Very aware.
170 Americans have been dead since 2007 due to that style of attack. I have already been screening my story to the special forces before deploying overseas to Iraq. I have been doing training with them for the last 10 years. And I look back, and actually I'm going again to an unknown location to train more SF guys and screen my film there with them. And my film has been featured with General Petraeus, former director of the CIA, higher members of the intelligence community as well as myself. And, you know, this takes me back to looking at that writer is that if I listened to that one voice in my life who told me that I won't make it, how this would have impacted other people's lives, people who I'm putting on the plane myself to send overseas to Iraq and to teach them about all this enemy tactics, how to keep their lives, how to keep themselves out of trouble dealing with terrorist organizations. I mean, look, back in my time, it was only about 9 active terrorist organizations that were causing a threat to the U.S. military. Today in Iraq, there's 168 of them. And this goes back all back to this person who told me one negative thing. If I have listened to that person, what would that have changed in my life? So I think people have to believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You have to push towards that heavy power that's coming at you with all you got. You don't look at the size of the enemy. Look at how much power you have. And that's really what it makes a difference. And you know, I've been pretty successful with my story, and now I'm releasing my film, done all a lot of different things. I'm still active.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking back, it took one guy, one person to tell me that I couldn't make it. And that's all it took. And it's all about, again, the power of choice. What choice do you want to make?
Hamidi, I love that. That's, it's beautiful. It really is. There's so many points you made. I just want to tell, like, you're going to have to rewind like the last 10 minutes of this and just listen to this, probably the whole episode again. I can't wait to listen to it when I edit it. And there's so many points you said there, but go against the waves. Truly, go against the waves, believe in yourself. And it's so funny how people, and it's the naysayers are usually people that they definitely don't think you can do it, but they probably don't think they could have done it themselves. So what? He was a New York Times bestselling author already, but I think people, I'm trying to envision this. I'm sure he was intimidated by you in some manner, and that's probably some of the reason. And he thought, I'm some hot shot New York Times selling author that I'm just going to tell him not to do it, and he's simply not going to do it. So I think one of the other things before I even dive deeper into that is that you had your own struggles in Iraq. You had your own struggles here, and they're very relative struggles. So yes, some of them are bad in one way, but some of them are very bad in the other way. And it's all absolutely relative, and it's all so different for everybody. So I don't want somebody listening to be like, oh, don't just tell me, you know, I don't have any problems over here in America just because somebody experienced some, you know, tough stuff somewhere else. And that's not at all what we're saying right here. And that's especially what you said right there. But man, I'm just so happy to hear that, because it's so funny, because when those things happen, they just light a fire, and you went and you looked up the stats and you're like, man, I crushed him. And one of the things I took out of that as well is one of the things I love to talk about is helping people. So you're like, think about all the people that I've helped that go forward, or not even just the people that you've helped through your book and through the movie that's going to come out, but you simply doing that and setting an example for, how did you say it? You said a foreign, what did you say? What did he call you?
Foreign national.
He called you a foreign national. And I'm just like sitting here like in disgust, because so my mother, this is a Christoph Lewis podcast, but my mother, I'm Christoph. We were talking about names before. And my mother's Hungarian. She moved here when she was 29. She came to the United States to Manhattan in New York City, and busted her ass. And my dad, the same thing. He's from the States. But it runs in my blood, and I understand it. And I get so sick and tired of this. Like, who the... I try not to get so heated, but at the same time, I'm like, that shit is just like, it's... How dare you? Like, who are you to say that this person can and cannot make it because they are from or not from this country? It's just absurd to me.
Because they believed in one way in the American people. And that's the truth.
But who are the American people if not foreign entities?
And I didn't believe, you know, I didn't believe people were that bad. And that's why I was like, you know what? I don't think people would look at it the way you think people would look at it.
Fuck that guy.
I was like, regardless, you know what? People have been amazing. People have been amazingly supportive.
Yeah. Hell yeah, they have.
Lots of people have been so supportive from all side of the politics, all side of the countries, all backgrounds.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, especially the veterans that fought over there during your time, you know.
You saved lives. You saved lives.
You know, like, it was about, like, look, you were fighting bad guys in the battle, but you never knew who they were. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't many people who were doing this job to figure out who these people were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There wasn't many.
Yeah.
And veterans appreciate, the veterans are my biggest support, literally, in this world, especially, you know, like when I see a veteran, it's like I see a family member. I understand them. They know my language. They understand what I come from. They don't judge you. That's the one thing too, you know, especially the ones who served overseas, whether mm-hmm. Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, that I would say, honestly, like the battles that I faced here coming to the United States are a lot harder than the battles that I had in Iraq.
Wow.
You know,
that's
because
heavy.
In Iraq, it was a fight. It was either you're going to make it or they're going to make it. Here, you were facing social anxiety. You were facing racial discrimination. It's hard. It was hard for you to – you are not in that uniform. You're not that in superhero suit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you're among many people. And people could be judgmental. And people could be very prejudiced,
mm-hmm.
and you would hear things that would insult you. You'll feel insulted. You know, like I would feel insulted when someone associates me with a terrorist because I happen to have the same skin color as I do. Because you're going to have to call every Mexican that way because I look like a Mexican as well. So, you know, it was like these kind of experiences that you went through, and it was just about how hard you were going to come out of it. I mean,
yeah.
I came to points in my life where, you know, people were being mean to me. They were being very prejudiced, and I looked at it, and I was like, you know what? These are the people I was fighting for.
Yeah.
But then I realized, you know what? These are not the people I was fighting for. I was fighting for the ones who were in uniform. This dumbass right here has been watching too much news and never been outside of his own hometown. How do I expect him to be educated about a foreign issue like Iraq or Afghanistan? They don't know anything, and they watch like too much TV, and they have certain judgments on things. Perhaps I have met people who would talk about my country like they knew everything about it, but they never been there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And until I talk to them, and they will say, oh, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'll be like, look, I am actually an Iraqi. I'm born and raised there. And they're like, well, maybe you were there when you were a kid. No. I came here in 2008. So I know exactly. I lived this. And whatever you're talking about is not true. It's not the reality. This is just news. And I found that we were fighting in Iraq with all this craziness. And one thing was going on. And I came here and I realized that the people thought of it in a way, very different way. Mm-hmm. than what we had in Iraq. And that was my biggest challenge, is how was I going to be able to explain this war to people to understand it? So that's why I put my book out there,
mm-hmm.
and I am excited about putting my film out there for people to understand the dynamics of that war, the dynamics of that enemy that we were facing. This wasn't, you know, people are so familiar with Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, but these are not the only figures in the game. We had so many of them.
168.
It's so convoluted that you just, you know, it's too many of them.
Yeah.
And people only know the celebrities of that, Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, but haven't seen the other individuals and who they are, what their backgrounds are. And it was a lot of learning for us. It was a lot of learning for me. It was a lot of learning for the U.S. intelligence back then, who was actually put on a mission that was extremely difficult to collect information on someone in his own country, using his own language, using a methodology he never used,
mm-hmm.
don't use any technologies. That was like, and you don't know anything about its politics. It's a crazy. It was a mission impossible. So I find it amazing today that when I have people reach up to me with messages on emails or Instagram or whatever, Facebook or social media, and tell me, you know what, I have read your book. It changed the way I think about people. And mm-hmm. that's the reason I released my book.
Yeah.
It's to get, because they're not bad people. They're not prejudiced. It's just they thought of it in a certain way because they were told about it in a certain way.
Correct.
And
yes.
I am challenging in news channels who are spreading, excuse my language, who's spreading bullshit in the daily basis, and you know, and I'm challenging these guys. So I'm just a little small guy with a story
yeah.
to challenge all this, that to change the mentality of people. And I enjoy today, enjoy seeing those changes, enjoy seeing people are being understanding, being more accepting, and changing those people, you know, mentality about really what was on in the war, because you can never judge, you know, you can never judge an Afghan guy for the Taliban's.
Sure.
You can never judge an Iraqi for the Al Qaeda. I mean, Al Qaeda does not have a nationality. You know, I battled the Iraqi guys who were a member of Al Qaeda, but Al Qaeda was no nationality. It was led by a Saudi. His deputy was from Egypt. Now ISIS coming over with a lot of guys who are Aryans, white people from Germany, Netherlands. To, you know, terrorism has no identity, and it's hard. You know, you're being a minority and you're trying to put your thoughts and your ideas versus what NBC and Fox News is putting on the daily basis. And it's still a fight for me. I'm still doing it in the daily basis. I'm still educating. I'm still doing it every single day. And I found it important to educate the soldiers who are deploying overseas, because once you come into that game, this is not America. This is Iraq. Your threat is right next to you. And if you're not smart enough to take actions, you can lose your life. So that's what I really enjoy about putting my story out there.
Yeah, I absolutely love everything about that. And I just, in conclusion, I wanted to say, like, it can be very tough to think about who you're fighting when you're forward. And a lot of times people, you know, hate all the money that's going to the military. They hate the military in general and things like this, and very strong words like hate because of what's going out on the news. And you're right. Only limited things are put out on the news. I know that. I remember the first time I started realizing that when I was experiencing forward and what I was seeing being portrayed at home and seeing people bash things left and right. So, I mean, I was like, man, I'm out for it. I'm risking my life for them. So I understand that. And I personally subscribe to, like, I fight for everybody that is a United States citizen that lives here in this country, regardless of that, regardless of how upset I get about them bashing whatever. I don't necessarily take blame from them because they're a human. They can do their due diligence. They can, especially nowadays, they can get on the internet and they can find things, like you had mentioned, people from the left and right supporting you. And I could give a shit about the left or the right in totality. Like, I pull shit from the left, I pull shit from the right, I pull shit from the middle, and I create me, who I am, this human being right here with my own interpretations and opinions. So when I'm fighting for this country, I fight for this country and everybody in it, regardless of their beliefs, because that's what we fight for. And I'm very, very happy to hear that you've gone and done that. You know, said, screw this guy. You released your book. You're helping people. You released your movie. You're helping more people. And you're going out there and you're fighting the battle still here every single day in one way or another. And I'm so damn appreciative of your time and for sharing your story. And
my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm enjoying, really, you know, I've been enjoying the ride and been enjoying meeting people.
Yeah.
You know, I was recently diagnosed with a brain tumor due to the area that I was operating in, and the Iraqi MOD was radiated.
Sorry to hear that.
And I learned a lot about people. It was the best thing, actually. It wasn't a bad thing. It was the best thing ever happened to me. I had, like, veteran groups knocked to my door and wanted to help out in any way they can. I have people who knocked at my door. I didn't even know who they were. You know, veteran groups from left and right, biker clubs. Perhaps I had, like, biker clubs in New Jersey who did, like, a ride in my honor when I was, you know, in the beginning of my stages fighting this horrible disease. And you know, they had shut down a whole highway in New Jersey, did a whole, like, 400 bikes ride. I went to there and, you know, I just realized, and I said, you know what, people marked these guys as a bad individuals, as gangs, as racist, whatever. And here they are, they're supporting someone from Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, the truth is one thing. And then what goes on in TV is another. And I'm like, these guys didn't have to do this. These guys didn't have to be there for me, but they appreciate what you've been through, what you've done for them as veterans. And they're not giving up on you. And perhaps I didn't even know some of the clubs. It was like Rolling Thunder and Band of Brothers. And one of them was like Hell's Angels,
wow.
which were considered like a gang. And people were like, you realize this is the most dangerous gang in the country. And I showed up because, you know what? The government didn't knock on my door. It was these guys who knocked on my door.
Yeah.
And I showed up, and I didn't care. You know, it was people were like, you know, they're like, you need to be careful. This is like a dangerous gang. Hell's Angels are very anti, like, whatever. I showed up, and these people were like raising money to pay for my medical bills. So anybody would have believed that hearing this? No, nobody would have. But I wouldn't even believe it standing there.
That's so
and
funny.
These people were so welcoming, so loving, so supportive, and they stood out there and they told me right to my face, they don't care where I come from, they don't care what do I believe in, where I was born. They just care about that, you know, one day you fought on our side and that's all that matters. And
yeah,
and that just got me to realize that, you know, like veterans, we're here for one another, and we can't let politics or political individuals or candidate or political parties to divide us, because what we fought for is a country, not a political party. And you know, that's what got me to really to be proud to be American, is that
yeah.
Seeing the good of people, you know, like the positive side of people. And
yeah,
hey, did I ever think like Hell's Angels will be knocking on my door checking on my health? No, but hey, they were there. I mean,
yeah.
I was like, out of all these Americans, these people care for your life. And
it's funny how that works, right? It's funny.
And you know, that was one positive thing about them that I saw. You know, I was like, I didn't bother to look about what people listed them as or what the government listed them as. There was something positive in them. They love this country, and that they wanna help veterans. They wanna do something possible. And that got me to show respect for a lot of veterans, regardless of what their status is. And I had a wonderful day in New Jersey with them.
Man, that's incredible. That's so great. You're just so right about, like, you don't know who it kind of reminded me of, like, the guy telling you that don't release your book. It's like
yeah.
somebody else telling you, well, these aren't the type of people. These are the people that not no type of nothing. They're the people that are actually, like you said, coming to my door. So I absolutely love that you mentioned that as well. And it's just like, again, going against the wave.
And it's the same thing, too, when people says, you know what, if you release your story, they might come after you. Al-Qaeda or Islamic yeah. State might come after you. You'll be a target.
Yeah.
Most of them thought you were dead when you left Iraq. Now they're going to see you out there back. They may retaliate. I mean, you caused them damage. You got some of them killed. You got some of them detained. And these are not regular A-level Al-Qaeda fighters. These were operatives that was operating as leaders and as a sleeping cells commanders that you caused them to be gone and stop their operations. That they might come back after you. But if you think that way, isn't that what they want?
Yes.
Isn't that what yeah. the enemy want? It's for yeah. you to silence yourself. And that's the same exact thing they wanted to do back then, is to silence me or to stop my activities. And I just didn't want to give the enemy what they want. And, you know, if I wasn't afraid to lose my life back then, why would I be afraid now? And, you know, no matter what, even though, you know, I didn't fight as much as some of my team members, you know, some of my team members has been fighting for 16 years. They're still on the fight. They're in one war after another, and they won't get tired of it. You know, I asked them and I'm like, what are you doing this for? And they would say, you know, this is what we're fighting for. We're fighting for the children that have been taken as sex slaves. We're fighting for the families, for the innocent civilians. So many voices are going to tell you no in your life. So many voices are going to say, you can't do this or you can't do that. And, you know, I just decided to go against whoever told me no,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whoever that didn't yeah. believe in me. I believe I built an amazing brand, amazing way to establish myself on my own. I didn't need the New York Times. I didn't need any of it. Eventually, they all came to me. And I didn't need any of that. I didn't yeah. need somebody sitting in a suit behind a desk to decide whether I'm worth it or not. I decide to do that, not them. So that's what people need to do, is that believe in yourself. Don't just because you see someone successful, it doesn't mean they can be the judge of your life or tell you can do something or you can't do something. They can't be the judge of your life because they're not you.
Amity, I absolutely love that. Thank you so much for sharing everything that you've shared with us today. It's truly inspiring, and it just encapsulates everything that I want to hit. You just touched every single pillar that this podcast stands upon throughout the transition of your life, helping others, the countless obstacles you've had, and so much education throughout the duration of your life. And you continue to educate yourself, and you continue to educate other people. So like I said, I'm just absolutely grateful for your time. I know it's precious, and I'm just so excited that people could tune in and hear more. If people want to get your book, if people want to learn about you more, where can they find you?
The Terrace Whisperer, as you know, it's all my story, my brand. So, they can find me anywhere. If they want to get a book, just go to theterracewhisperer.com. That's where you can get an autographed book. My Instagram account is The Terrace Whisperer as well. You can find me there. You'll see the poster of my film. And you'll see a picture of me at 19 years old when I was very skinny. And The Terrace Whisperer, that's really pretty much, it's my brand, you know, and, you know, my story out there. So, people need to find me, talk to me. I'm not the kind of a guy where I don't respond to people. I was just on Mike Ritland's podcast, and he has like thousands and thousands of fans. And I think each one of his fans have sent me a question about Iraq. And it took me about 2 months, but I figured out a way to answer every single person the way that I need to, because I don't mean to be disrespectful or ignore people.
Absolutely.
Not like the other people out there. I'm no difference than anyone, and that's my mission. That's the point I put my story out there, is to educate the public. So
that's awesome.
Take my time answering. So if anybody have any questions, send me a message on Instagram.
Absolutely. I did want to know. I'm a combat RTO, so I was a radio man, a comms guy, as they say, and I worked with them, and I often humbly say I worked and walked next to giants. So I was out there. I was the guy running around with an antenna on his back, helping out those gentlemen. And I'm absolutely humbled to have done that. I just want to make sure nobody calls me out for saying something I'm not. I'd have to cover my six. You know what I'm saying? But
You know what? Every veteran who served during whatever war that they've been into, whether they were a cook, communication guy, Navy SEAL, special operative, whatever it is, we're all completing one each other. There's no one better than one another. My job wasn't any different than the guy who is had to feed 3,000 soldiers every single day. We're all completing one another. We all were fortunate, and each one of us had faced his own challenges every day.
I love that. That's such a great note to end on. Hamidi, I really appreciate that. That's a very powerful note to end on. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful rest of your night.
My pleasure.